From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
This week on the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, unfunded public employee pensions is a problem that's not going away anytime soon. And while the legislature made significant changes to the pensions of new state employees, there are some that think that those changes did not go far enough because they didn't address the public employee pensions of current employees. Are changes in the pensions of current public employees necessary? Or is the underfunding of public employee pensions a problem several years in the making that will require some patience and several years to fix? We'll ask advocates on both sides of the issue. Marcia Fritz, Director of Californians for Fiscal Responsibility. Christy Buma, a principal with Capital Connection, a lobbying firm that represents California firefighters, the CSEA, and other public employees. And we'll talk with John Ortiz, who writes the Sacramento Bee's state worker blog that's considered a go-to resource for the latest rumblings at the state capitol on public employee pensions. We'll also hear from Merced City Manager John Bramble and Bakersfield City Manager Alan Tandy. Public employee pension reform. Is patience a virtue?
Additional funding for the Maddie Report made possible by a grant from Paramount Agricultural Companies, growing healthy food for you and your family.
From Fresno, the Maddie Report, with Executive Director of the Maddie Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. In 2012, California enacted pension reform. Most of the reforms, however, impacted new rather than current employees. Does more need to be done? Or do we simply have to be patient and let the reforms kick in? Our guests probably have different answers to that question. They are Christy Buma, who's a principal with Capital Connection, a lobbying firm that represents public employees, and Marcia Fritz with Californians for Fiscal Responsibility, a pro-pension reform group. Welcome to the Maddie Report.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Marcia, let me start with you. Can you briefly explain the magnitude of the pension problem and whether or not the 2012 reforms went far enough?
Well, the magnitude is of the problem. We're underfunded about $500 billion, and we're paying that off over time. Our costs are really high. The pension reform measure over 30 years will provide savings of about $100 billion. So it went a long way toward helping. But it's not fixing the entire $500 billion.
Christy, $500 billion problem?
So I would, if just to be a little levity, I would quote my grandfather. He always said, "Christy, figures lie and liars figure." So my only response is we probably disagree on whether $500 billion is an accurate
estimation. But it is a big problem.
It's certainly a problem, and you can make it bigger by changing assumptions. You can make it smaller and both sides play games with those numbers. So.
I think Mark Twain said there are lies, damn lies, and statistics in that
exactly.
order.
Exactly.
So what are your statistics?
I actually share Marcia's statistics about how the pension reform solves the problem to the tune of...
About $100
billion? $50 to $100 billion. I would be probably more conservative because it's, markets are involved, assumptions are involved, and then the actions of retirement boards, and I think we'll get to that later about what... How quickly does a fund recover based on, assumptions that are made by these plans?
Christy, last year's reform measures didn't ignore current employees completely. Current employees are going to pay half of what's called normal costs of their retirement. Will that eventually cover the unfunded liability?
So I'll probably repeat myself a little. That will contribute greatly. And one thing that I didn't mention in your previous question is that what's rarely talked about, although you do see it in some articles, is that the bargaining table is taking care of another big piece of the unfunded liability. I know that the members of the California Professional Firefighters, who I'm more closely connected with what's happening at the bargaining table, are agreeing to pay above and beyond 50% of normal cost, have done even prior to the 2012 reform, and continue to particularly that issue, go to the table with that issue.
Marcia, paying half the normal cost, is that going to take care of the unfunded liability?
Well, no, because there's two parts to your contribution. You have your normal costs, and then you have your unfunded liability costs.
So normal costs are what you are you have to pay to fund your specific pension.
Right.
But the unfunded liability is everybody else that hasn't been funding their pension. Is that it?
Yeah. It's caused by several different factors: market losses, wages that spiked higher than what the actuaries assumed when they set these rates years ago, lots of different people living longer. That's what causes the unfunded liability. For the typical firefighter in California, let's put it in dollar number terms, their normal cost is about 24% of wages. But then over and above that, we have to contribute another 30% of their wages toward the unfunded liability. So many fire districts, their total pension cost is over 50% of their wages. And that's what we're talking about. So we're the firefighters up until the reform last year, most of them were paying nothing toward their pension costs. 100% of it was picked up by the taxpayer.
You know, Krista, I want to ask you about your point about negotiations. I mean, if you have negotiations on pension issues, isn't ultimately it going to be kind of a net zero? Because there's going to be a quid pro quo. If the employees give back something on pensions, they're going to want something else, some other benefit. So aren't you just at a net zero?
I wouldn't say that's always the case. Of course, that's, you know, the collective bargaining. That's the point of, you know, mutual exchange of benefits. But firefighters, since we're talking about those specifically, and I could go back on a couple of things that were entirely accurate, but, you know, I have my president of the CPF now negotiated a contract before he became the president of the CPF 8 years ago, where the employees agreed to pay 23% of pay towards their pensions. So to suggest that it was only the saving grace of this 2012 reform that caused firefighters to be forward thinking, and so to your question, they're members of their community. The city, the county, the district is their employer. If an employer doesn't survive and ends up like a Stockton, Vallejo,
San Bernardino,
it is not in their interest. So they come to the bargaining table with that reality. And so I would offer to you that what I've seen my firefighter locals report is they don't just exchange one benefit for another. Maybe they focus on non-economic issues, you know, shift priority, vacation scheduling, all the other things that are, you know, on the bargaining table but not necessarily have an economic impact.
I've only got 30 seconds left in this segment. I want to ask you a question, Marcia, about can state pension funds bypass the entire negotiating process and take unilateral action by doing things like changing the discount rate to address the problem?
No, because they've got very strict parameters within the governmental accounting standards and the actuarial standards to do that. No, they can't do it and still comply with their standards. But she's focused on one district where their firefighters are paying toward their pensions. Our research before pension reform last year was that most public safety workers did not contribute to their pensions.
And public safety is police and fire.
This is statewide. Most of them did not.
We're talking with Christy Boma, principal with Capital Connection, a firm that advocates for public employees, and Marcia Fritz, director of California for Fiscal Responsibility, that advocates for pension reform. So, Christy, what about this San Bernardino versus Stockton issue? San Bernardino is using bankruptcy to get out of his pension obligation. Stockton isn't. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, just generally, I guess I'd probably just highlight the one issue that I think has been in dispute in San Bernardino, which is, you know, do public employee pensions compare to debt issuance? One thing, there's strictly a risk investment tool. The return is based on the risk versus, you know, a way to defer salary to save for retirement. They're not the same thing. So I think we're all very interested in what the outcome will be and the impact on pensions in the future. But it's certainly to expect that someone who's profiting off taking a risk and backing debt versus a pension fund, they're just apples and oranges and shouldn't be treated the same.
So San Bernardino using bankruptcy protection, attempting to. Stockton saying, no, we're going to pay our pension obligations. What's the better approach?
Well, I think Stockton's deal relies on a tax increase, and there's no question that the tax increase is a pension tax. So the question, if the voters agree that they'll pay this pension tax in order to keep the city running, then I think Stockton had a real good deal. I think the workout with the bondholders and not touching pensions was really good on their part. It depends on that tax increase. If San Bernardino is doing what they can, we believe pensions and bonds are both debt, and the Governmental Accounting Standards Board agrees with me that if you don't fund a promise, whether it's to pay a bond back or to pay a pension, if you don't fund it, properly, then that's a debt, and they should be treated similarly.
You know, I wanted to ask you about Governor Brown's proposal last year, the 12-point proposal. One of the things that he wanted in there that he didn't get was this hybrid plan of changing traditional pensions to a combination of traditional pensions plus a 401k. You think that idea is likely to resurface in 2014?
It's possible. You know, we'd love to say it's about ideology that drives what ends up on the ballot, but I'm sure people are testing all sorts of ideas to continue to get at this issue where sides disagree. But I would also suggest that the pension reform that the governor achieved is a version of a hybrid plan now, because it is not just reduced pension formulas, but it's also got an affiliated cap. So there is an absolute ceiling at to what the defined benefit can accrue to, and anybody who wants to save more in retirement would then have to turn to a defined contribution type vehicle to save above and beyond that pension.
So the governor's hybrid plan is one option. Another thing being floated by San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed, a Democrat, is to ask voters to change the California Constitution and allow state and local governments to lower pensions prospectively for current employees. So you'd keep what you had accrued up to this point, but then change it going forward. Is that breaking a promise to those employees, or making necessary changes based on changing reality?
I think it's allowing changes to be made to ensure that the system is solvent. And he's got as far as I understand, he's got the backing of 9 other Democrat city mayors in California for his idea. And he's really not breaking a promise. These are tools that that the private companies have had forever. If they've got a pension plan that they find out is too expensive, then they make adjustments to it going forward. We've had that in the private sector, and he's just making government workers on the same plane as what we have in the private sector.
Briefly, Christy, what is your response?
It's a broken promise to workers.
That's a brief
surprise.
Response.
Right.
Well, I want to thank Christy Boma with Capital Connection and Marcia Fritz with Californians for Fiscal Responsibility for joining us. We're now joined by John Ortiz, who writes the Sacramento Bee's State Worker Blog. That's a must read if you want to know about what's happening with state and public employees. Welcome back to the Matty Report.
Thanks, Mark.
You recently reported that California public pension payouts have doubled after a bump in benefits, with police and fire actually benefiting the most. What were your findings?
Yeah, we took a look at some internal reports from CalPERS, the state's big pension fund, and what we found was that the initial retirement check for state and local employees had, as you said, doubled and in some cases even tripled. Reflecting changes, I think, in how pension benefits have been calculated since 1999.
Now, part of that is the pension calculation. Part of it also is the higher salaries.
That's right. Yeah, the higher salary contributed to probably half to three quarters of those increases, with changes to formula to the way benefits are calculated essentially contributing to the balance, amplifying the effect of the pay raises.
You know, there were a bunch of reforms back in 2012 regarding public employee pensions, and there was a big brouhaha recently involving the U.S. Secretary of Labor and those pension reforms. What happened?
Well, the federal government ties mass transit grants, about $1.6 billion for California, to employers preserving their employees' collective bargaining rights or their collective representation for states that don't have collective bargaining. And when the governor signed that law, the mass transit unions objected, saying that the rules that it imposed on their employers to change their pensions violated that federal condition of getting the money. So essentially, that money's been held hostage.
Okay, so under the law, employees have a right to negotiate over things like wages and benefits.
Correct.
And they're saying that we weren't given this right. The governor and the legislature changed the pension rules without negotiating.
That's right. So they struck a bargain. And just recently, the governor filed a lawsuit in federal court. The courts are going to settle that fight. In the meantime, about 20,000 mass transit employees are out from under the state's pension law. They are continuing as they did before while this thing gets hashed out in the courts.
Okay. Now, there's a change in some government accounting rules. Sounds pretty arcane and really in the weeds, as we were talking about when we were off camera. A recent report, though, from CalSTRS said that their debt, and this is for the teacher retirement fund, would increase almost $100 billion under the new accounting rules. So can you briefly tell us what's going on there?
Yeah, this is all about what crystal ball you're going to use to predict the future. And the way that the rules have been so far is that pension funds could essentially make an assumption about how much their investments would return to them. And that's important because then it allows them to discount their liabilities by that amount. So what this new rule does is it says that the part that you don't have the money to cover, you have to assume you're going to get less of a return on investments to cover that amount. And that's why CalSTRS is looking at $170 billion instead of $171 billion in unfunded liabilities because of that lower rate of return they have to assume.
You know, there are lots of pension reform proposals in 2012. Some of them passed, but all of them really affected new employees, not current employees. So when are we going to see the effects of that pension reform, the 2012 pension reform?
It will take years, many years. Experts that I've talked to say that about 3% of the state workforce enters retirement. It's about the same for local governments. And then you hire new people in. The new people will be coming in under the less generous pension benefit formula. But it's going to take 15 years, 20 years before you reach a point where more people are getting lesser benefits than people who are receiving more generous benefits. That's kind of the tipping point, probably 20 years.
Okay. How much of the pension problem was due to a down market? And as the market rebounds, isn't that unfunded liability being erased or certainly diminished?
Well, I think what the market did was it exposed a weakness. It revealed that when you are trying to predict 30 years out what you're going to earn, it's virtually impossible, especially when you have a Great Recession hit you right between the eyes. But there are a lot of people who think that even prior to that, the pension funds were in trouble. They just weren't fessing up to it.
Okay. One way you could address the problem is by changing the discount rate. Instead, right now, they're saying it's going to return 7.5% on their investments. If you'd lower that, you'd increase employee contributions. Is that easier said than done?
Well, you would increase employee and employer contributions. The government would have to kick in more, too. That's you and me.
Right, the taxpayer.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I mean, that is a very heavy lift politically. When you start moving that assumption down, you have to put your hand out for more money. And for CalSTRS, we were just talking about them, they're in a unique position because they can't demand that the government give them more money, whereas other pension funds generally can.
You know, I want to ask you about some of the issues revolving around bankruptcy. There's some communities like San Bernardino are using bankruptcy to kind of negate their pension obligations. Do you think that's going to be a winning strategy?
I think there's a lot of baggage that goes with bankruptcy. When you just think about people who file bankruptcy personally, there's a tendency to say, oh, they're irresponsible, they're just sloughing it off. It's a painful process. I don't know that Stockton exactly had a banner that said, biggest city to declare bankruptcy. I don't think they were really proud of that.
Detroit has that banner.
Detroit now has that distinction, and I don't think they're flying that on their letterhead either. There are real downsides to bankruptcy. I do think that as governments get put in a corner, you'll see that used more, but I think they will do everything they can to avoid it.
We're talking with John Ortiz, who writes the Sacramento Bee's State Worker blog. You know, is all this talk about public employee pensions a lot of sound and fury signifying nothing? I mean, is the issue off the table?
I think that the state legislature views it as such, but the local governments are really struggling with this, as we just mentioned a few moments ago, that you have local government just facing growing pension obligations. CalPERS is going to be demanding more from their employers in the coming years. So for them, it is not off the table. They spend so much of their budgets now, 70-80% in some cases, on employee compensation. The state only spends about 15-20%. So there's a disconnect politically between the legislature and the locals. And I think as the locals struggle more, the issue has legs.
So in the future, what are we going to see in terms of pension reform? Are we going to see bankruptcy like we talked about earlier? Are we going to see more legislation? Are we going to see an initiative on the ballot?
Bankruptcy is case by case, painful, and takes a long time. You'll see some of that, but I don't think that solves the problem. The legislature is not going to act because their attitude is going to be, we've done this, let's see how it goes. That leaves the initiative process. I think very definitely you will see a move again this year to try to get something on the ballot for 2014. If that fails, it's an evergreen issue. It will come up again and again and again.
You know, you recently wrote about an out-of-state shadow 501c4 organization called the Action Now Initiative that may be getting involved in San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed's pension reform initiative. I guess initially he asked them to bankroll that initiative, that pension initiative, by $200,000. First of all, do you think he'll get that measure on the ballot? And secondly, is that worth it to him to have a shadowy out-of-state organization bankrolling an initiative? Is it worth the political blowback?
Well, it certainly will hand the opponents of the initiative a huge stick to swing, and they already are. They're making great hay out of this, too, which is a relatively small amount of money. It takes $3 million, $4 million to get a measure on the ballot for signature collection. You're going to spend that much.
That's all.
Yeah. So $200,000 is not a huge amount of money, but it's already being used as something of a bellwether by the anti-pension reform crowd. Look, it only takes a couple of people willing to write a couple million-dollar checks. They're out there. And I think that could happen.
You know, last go-around with the initiatives, the majority of those initiatives were bankrolled by like one or two people.
That's right.
So they have a big influence on the outcome or whether these things even get on the ballot. You know, pensions seem to be the quintessential kick the can down the road kind of issue. Employees defer wage increases, and the cities and counties and state are more than happy to have those wage increases deferred with the promises of a generous pension down the road. But then when the pension comes due, they say, well, we really can't afford it. Oh, we're going to go now turn to our new employees and reduce their pensions up. Is that a good strategy?
Well, I think it's an understandable strategy because if you think about it, the people who make these promises are in and out of office. They make a promise, they're gone. They don't have to deal with the results. The employees sometimes are with their employer for 20, 30 years. And so you can see from their perspective, it's very unfair. And I think it's just bad management. Promise less, give more.
You know, it's interesting when they have a different situation for current workers and new employees. I'm just wondering, over time, you might have a workforce that's split half and half between the old system and the new system. And so a new employee under the new system, is working under a much lower pension calculation. I wonder how he or she is going to feel working next to someone who has a much more generous pension calculation. I wonder about the employee morale implications.
Yeah, I suppose that it depends on what's happening in the economy at large. If other people in the private sector are enjoying great 401ks and can look forward to, you know, rich lifestyle after they work, perhaps that civil service employee with the lesser benefit will feel pretty bad. But if they look out at the landscape and they see that they're still relatively better off, I don't know that they'll be complaining much.
You know, ask one last quick question. We only got 30 seconds left, and
yeah,
it's probably unfair to ask the question, but what about retiree health care? We haven't even talked about that. It's basically a pay-as-you-go system. Anything going to be done to address that issue?
I think Governor Brown will take a look at it in his second term. Pension reform was the first issue, first term. $64 billion debt that the state's racked up, and it's growing. He'll take a look at it in the second term.
Well, I want to thank John Ortiz from the Sacramento Bee State Worker Blog, Christy Buma with the Capital Connection, and Marcia Fritz with Californians for Fiscal Responsibility for joining us.
Up next, what impact will public employee pensions have on cities in the San Joaquin Valley? We'll talk to Merced City Manager John Bramble and Bakersfield City Manager Alan Tandy.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We've generally been talking about the state's public employee pension issues, but what about the public employee pension issues for the San Joaquin Valley? We have two perspectives on that issue, Merced City Manager John Brumble and Bakersfield City Manager Alan Tandy. Welcome to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
Thank you for inviting us.
We're delighted to have you. Well, John, let me ask you about what's going on in Merced, in the northern part of the valley. Do folks up there see public employee pension, that whole liability issue, as a big deal, or is it overblown?
Well, I don't believe it's it's not overblown, and it is an important issue because it is an expensive part of an employee's cost. But really, it's how vigilant we can be with our budgets and managing the expenditures that we have for our employees. So just to give you a perspective, for every $1 of an employee salary we spend a total of 38 cents in addition to that for other benefits. But of that 38 cents, 22 cents of that for retirement benefits for public safety, and 14 cents for the general employees. So it does have an impact, but it is not such a large item that it makes it the linchpin of whether we're going to be financially successful or not.
What about in Bakersfield, Alan? How are the folks feeling about that issue down there? I mean, you're reading stuff about what's going on in Stockton and in San Bernardino and Vallejo. Are folks in Bakersfield concerned about their public employee pensions?
Well, I think there is a concern. Actually, we had a referendum on lowering pension tiers, which took place prior to the state reform. Despite the fact that there was a very active campaign in opposition sponsored by the labor unions, it passed by a clear margin. And I think that wouldn't have happened unless there was a broad-based concern.
What kinds of things did you do in that measure?
It significantly lowered the pension benefits for new employees. We had negotiated lower tiers of pension benefits with the blue and white collar unit. So what the ballot issue was about was the public safety units. And again, you know, they had very active, well-financed campaigns asking the voters to vote no, and there was really no campaign in support of the measure. And the measure passed by a significant margin.
You know, it's interesting, though, the whole public safety issue, if you look at a lot of city budgets, my impression is that about, you know, 70-80% of the city budget's going to public safety, which is police and fire, because, of course, everybody wants to be safe, and they don't want their house to be burnt down without, you know, having the firefighter come to take care of them. But there are very, very big issues there in terms of their public employee pensions, because they're also a bit more generous, as you're mentioning. I was just wondering, has there been any negotiations at the table with police and fire about and I know you're dealing with new employees in Bakersfield, but Alan, at the table, have current employees taken any cuts in their pensions?
No. The legal parameters under which we function here are that is not a area which we can unilaterally implement, and certainly the unions wouldn't be in favor of negotiating such change.
Yeah. So John, in Merced, you know, you're talking about the fact that 38 cents of that you're paying toward benefits versus every dollar in pay, and you said 22 cents, I believe, went to public employee pensions. What's causing this? Is that because they have higher salaries than the typical public employee? Is their pension calculation more generous? What's driving that?
Well, I think there's a number of things that are driving it. One is, yes, they do have higher salaries than the general employee of the city. Two, it's they have a shorter work period usually than your general employees. Your general employees, some of them can work until they're 65 or 68 years old. I don't know that there's many people that want a 68-year-old police officer trying to protect them. And so they obviously have a benefit that cuts their kind of stops at 50 or 55. We, too, have negotiated the benefit, but we've done it mostly from the standpoint of how much they are contributing to the benefit. And so we've actually reduced our cost for the city down almost 7% with the bargaining units, with them picking up a greater percentage of the share of the contribution, as opposed to just the city paying the entire amount.
You know, I wanted to ask you, John, about the shortfall. Some people are saying that the reason why you have this unfunded liability is because of the Great Recession, and that as the market rebounds, that unfunded liability, that gap is going to close. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it'll close, but it really will depend on what CalPERS does with a couple of items. I mean, they obviously have to recalculate the mortality rate And they're also in the process of recalculating and reconsidering what the discount rate is going to be. So those are going to have some costs to cities because they have been pretty generous in the past. And so we will see our costs continue to increase. And I'm not sure that I'm really answering your question, but basically it's a variety of factors, not of all of which are the responsibility of the city or the employee for negotiating higher salaries.
Yeah, you know, I was reading some statistics, and they were saying that CalPERS is now 70% funded, which doesn't sound all that good, but usually when you talk to actuaries, they say about 80% funded is considered fiscally prudent. So I'm wondering, Alan, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that the rebound in the market has improved the overall financial outlook for pension funds, and maybe we're, you know, this is going to take care of itself?
No, I don't think it'll take care of itself. First, there's a long lag time between when the market improves and when PERS actually registers that money into the actuarial analysis. And so you can actually be in a different economic cycle in the 2 or 3 years it takes them to put that into the actuarial model. Secondly, you know, they change their model from time to time. They make other changes in their formulas that can either positively or negatively impact the amount that is owed. But generally, you know, it is getting worse and is projected to get worse for the next 3 years, despite short-term improvement in the economy.
Yeah, so the kinds of things that they could change that you were talking about is that, what? Well, first of all, salaries can increase. That can impact pensions. They can change the pension calculation. You know, the discount rate you were talking about earlier, you know, that's how much they expect their rate of return. To the extent that they think it's a little lower, they're going to ask for more employee contributions. So there's lots of ways that you can manipulate these numbers, I suppose. Alan, let me ask you this. Except for increasing employee contributions, most of the reforms last year were directed at future employees. You know, how long is it going to take before we see the effect of those reforms? Do we just have to be patient and eventually things will correct? Or is this something that's these reforms are just really not going to hit for a long, long period of time?
Well, we run, as an employer, about a 5% annual turnover rate. And in police, it's closer to 10%. So obviously, it's going to take a number of years with those turnover rates before the curve turns and starts to go down rather than up. That's 5 to 10 years before you actually see any result that's substantial.
Yeah, John, is this something where patience is a virtue or maybe not a virtue in terms of waiting for these reforms to kick in?
Well, I think it's helped, but I agree with Alan. It's going to be 5 to 10 years before we really see much of a big change. And a lot of the baby boomers that are getting close to retirement age moving on out of the system, because we won't replace them with baby boomers. They're either going to be Gen Xers or millennials. So they're going to be at a lower rate of pay. They're obviously going to be in the new system. And although the cost is not a substantial different number, it's different enough so that it will have it will reduce our cost for employees.
You know, Alan, as we were talking earlier in the program, probably the most legally defensible way to deal with current public employee pensions would be to do it at the bargaining table. But is there real savings likely? Because isn't a union going to say, listen, if we give you something in terms of pensions, we want a quid pro quo. We want something in return. So the bottom line is a net zero. There's really no savings. Is that your concern?
You know, during the height of the recession, we were able to do some things that with the unions because of the cutbacks in staffing, because of the drama of the situation that are not achievable in normal times. And we're returning to normal times. And so Our units, if we do wish to increase how much they pay, then they're going to want it to come out of the whatever cost of living. They do not want it to come out of their cost of living adjustment, or they want a higher rate of pay if anything is to come out of it. So I think that window of opportunity that existed during the recession to do things that are extraordinary in nature is probably passed now.
Yeah, that's interesting, because in Fresno, what they did was they cut a deal with, it was public safety, to extend the contract during the recession. And some folks think maybe that would have been the time really to actually renegotiate some things. I'm just wondering, John, what you're seeing in, or what you think about what happened in Merced. Do you think that if you try to negotiate this for current employees, that you're really treading water here, because whatever give back they give on pensions, they're going to want something in return in some other part of the package?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a good business agent isn't going to allow their employees to give away something without something in return. And I don't see the existing bargaining unit making a change unless we had money to bring to the table.
Yeah, I'm sure taxpayers don't like to hear this, but the union's job is to get more for their members, not less. And so that certainly plays out in negotiations, and you guys are facing that. We're at the bargaining table, I'm sure. Let me ask you this last one question in this segment, and that is, I want to ask you about the discount rate we were talking about. That's the assumed rate of return. CalPERS, I believe, last year reduced it from 7.75% to 7.5%. Some folks think it should be even lower than that, maybe 7%, maybe even 6%. But as they lower the discount rate, that means that cities are going to have to contribute more to the pensions. So my question for you is, while it makes the pension plans more financially stable, it's also costing the cities more money. So where do you lie down in terms of whether or not you want to see that discount rate changed? John, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that CalPERS has to do that. And whether it's going to cost us more money or not, all I hope is that CalPERS tries to allow us to manage it and plan for it. One of the reasons that a lot of people select city employment is because there are better retirement benefits, or maybe there is equal to a lot of others, and United obviously had their problems. But, they come for some of the wages, but clearly for the retirement benefits. We need to think about this long term as opposed to the moment in time, and we make way too many decisions based upon the moment in time in our decision making. So I would like to see CalPERS go for the long term and be able to make their system and their plan far more financially viable for the future.
You know, it's interesting what you're saying about employees and why they might want to work for the public sector in terms of pay and benefits. What research has generally shown that I've seen is that if you're a lower skilled worker, you do better financially in the public sector. But if you're a highly skilled worker, you do worse financially in the public sector. I think sometimes people lump all public sector workers together, but there are some big differences between skill levels, whether we're talking public safety, general employees, et cetera. I want to end this section with you, Alan. Let you get the last word here on the discount rate. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that CalPERS should change the discount rate and be a little bit more conservative about what they're saying the return on investment is going to be going forward?
I do. You know, they are sometimes more politically than actuarially driven. And if you have an unreasonably high expectation and you don't achieve it, then it's like a time bomb. Then it hits you. You have fewer years to try to increase the amount you're collecting to cover it. So I would prefer, as John said, that they have realistic assumptions built into their model. And if that means our costs go up in the short term, it probably means they'll be better long term.
All right. Well, up next, are pensions a promise that can never be broken, or are there situations when pension promises need to be changed? That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
From News Talk 580 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Here is Mark Kepler.
Welcome back. We're talking about the different strategies California cities are using to address their public employee pension issues with Merced City Manager John Bramble and Bakersfield City Manager Alan Tandy. Last year Governor Brown floated this hybrid plan, which was a combination of a traditional pension plus a 401k plan. It wasn't part of the final reform package. I'm just wondering, is there any chance you think that might show up at future bargaining tables?
Oh, it might. Again, I think it's more likely to show up for new employees than for existing. One of the issues with it for existing is that it would alter the PERS actuarial analysis probably in a negative way. And so to date, to the best of my knowledge, they have resisted such changes. They don't allow that kind of thing unless it's completely supplemental to the traditional pension plan.
Can you describe for our listeners why that is?
Why the actuarial model would get worse?
Yeah.
Well, if you you assume you're 10 years from now and you have 40% of your workforce turned over, there are smaller amounts going into the pension fund to pay for the pensions. So,
right, because they're splitting it now with a 401k, they're not paying it all in for the traditional pension.
Right, so I think the model will necessitate increased payments to cover the loss of revenue for the incoming. And it would take a long time for the preponderance of the employees to be under the new program. So you might, in 20 years, make a savings, but I don't think you would short-term.
John, what do you think? Is that something you're going to see at the Merced bargaining table one of these days?
Well, we might see the increase in the employee contribution, but I agree with Alan. Financially, it doesn't make a lot of sense for the employees or the cities because it has the financial the long-term financial consequences of underfunding the CalPERS.
Okay. John, let me ask you this. You know, very different strategies used by cities that are dealing with some chronic problems here, like San Bernardino. They're using the bankruptcy court to limit their pension obligations. Stockton has taken a completely different tact, and they're saying, no, we're going to pay our pension obligations. What are your thoughts about using bankruptcy court to reorder a city's pension obligations?
Well, bankruptcy court has a very specific responsibility, which is to make sure that the creditors are properly compensated and then compensated at the highest amount possible. So the question really becomes if in fact the employees are considered creditors because of their pension, then I think that the bankruptcy court probably doesn't have a role in it, but at this point they're going to take it. And the other thing that concerns me is that the bankruptcy court does not take into consideration the vested rights that the employees have. I think it'll be an organization productivity nightmare for us, but at this point that's kind of a side note.
Okay. What about a situation in Bakersfield of folks down there? Do you think they'd ever entertain the notion if things got really bad to go the bankruptcy route as opposed to just keep paying it like Stockton's decided to do?
Bakersfield is a very conservative community. So we keep our revenues balanced with our expenditures on an annual basis, and we have a good balance sheet, and we never get in trouble. And the reason we never get in trouble is because we just don't spend like certain other jurisdictions do. So that's not something we're going to see. In a theoretical world, or for a world of others where they have a different makeup or background to their community, I think the last thing you'd want to do is disrupt your pension program. Because it isn't just the retirees who'd be damaged. I think your ability to retain your workforce would be crippled. They would never believe in the integrity of the system, and I think they would flee to other kinds of jobs.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking to John Ortiz, who writes the State Worker blog, and he says whenever he writes anything about public employee pensions, he gets a slew of responses. People get very excited about this. And we now have potentially a new proposition on the ballot next year that's being promoted by San Jose Mayor Chuck Reed, who happens to be a Democrat, by the way. And the idea that he has is that he's asking voters to change California's constitution so that state and local governments could lower pensions prospectively for current employees. So they'd be allowed to keep the benefits they already earned, but going forward, the benefit calculation would change. Maybe they'd go from a defined benefit plan, which is the traditional pension, to what's called a defined contribution plan, which people know as a 401k. I'm thinking, the question I have is philosophically, is that, public employees certainly would say that's breaking a promise. Or is this something that is just facing reality, because this happens a lot in the private sector? What are your thoughts, John?
Well, I'd like to back up. I agree with Alan that the communities that have been financially diligent about their budgets and their expenditures and their projects really shouldn't be impacted by San Bernardino, who did not do that. So I think that is one aspect that I'd just like to chime in on the other. In terms of the ballot initiative, I guess I've got problems with people trying to decide on a statewide basis what local government should be able to do. And I know that Bakersfield probably doesn't have the same kinds of recruitment issues we do, but I mean, the only reason we adopted the 3% at 50 plan was so that we could continue to get qualified applicants to fill the positions. And 401ks are wonderful things, but they have some inherent problems associated with them as well.
I want to jump in here just for a second.
Plan, I could understand it, but I haven't read it enough to know exactly what he is proposing.
John
is always in the details. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just want to jump in here for a second, because I think some of our listeners may not understand when you say 3% at 50 what that means. My understanding of that is that's typically for public safety, police or fire, and typically what that means is, well, what it means is the person gets 3% of their pay starting at 50. So in other words, if you start at age 20 and you work to age 50, that's 3 times 30 years, that's 90%. So then what you do is you get 90% of whatever last year's pay or last 3 years' pay, whatever the calculation is. Is that a good definition of 3%?
Yeah, in our case, it's the last three. We never had the highest year.
Right, because you can obviously game the system when you have the highest year. So I'm wondering, Alan, what are your thoughts on this potential proposition that may pop up next year on changing the state constitution?
You know, going back to the issue of why people are municipal employees, I would characterize it that generally they're not making as much money, but their benefits, particularly pensions and in often cases health care, are generally superior to the private sector's. And so that goal is to undermine the very foundation as to why we have the quality of workforce we do. For new employees, if it's being addressed that way, I don't have a problem with it. But for people in middle of career who have depended upon certain assumptions, put in 15 years or whatever, I don't think changing it is an appropriate action, and I think it will probably generate more money generated from labor unions than
yeah.
An opposition campaign. I think the opposition campaign would be very, very well funded and emotional and well staffed.
Yeah, it might be a good fundraising technique for the unions. That's going to be very true. Let me ask this one last question. We've only got about a minute left in the show, and I want to ask you about retiree health care. You know, a lot of communities. Well, the communities that do provide this to their retirees, a lot of them do it on a pay-as-you-go plan. I don't know what Merced or Bakersfield, I'm just curious as to what you guys do. In Bakersfield, do you have that for your employees, and how do you pay for it?
We had it for our employees until about 2006, in which case we negotiated it out for all incoming employees in the future. So it is a liability which continues to grow. We fully fund a reserve trust account for it in accordance with the actuarial model, which most jurisdictions don't do. But despite fully funding it and having, I think, $7 million in that trust account, it's going to continue to grow as a liability for about 10 more years until the lion's share of the workforce are in the unbenefited category, that is, they were hired after 2006.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we're out of time, so if you want to know what Merced's doing for retiree health, I guess you're going to have to look it up on the web. I want to thank our guests, Merced City Manager John Brumble and Bakersfield City Manager Alan Tandy, for joining us. If you want to keep up to date with state and local politics, you can sign up for our free e-newsletter, the Maddie Daily, by just logging onto our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Matty Report Valley Views Edition is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on important public policy issues.
This is Mark Kepler for the Matty Report Valley Views Edition. Thanks for joining us.